Good morning. Welcome to the Sunday special edition of A Vision for You. My name is Melanie C., and I'm a recovered compulsive overeater moderating this presentation for this morning. Today is Sunday, October 26, 2014. The share ID for Friday, October 24, 2014 is 6980. 6980 for Friday. The topic of today's presentation is, I don't think that these chapters apply to me, or do they? A focus on chapters 8, 9, and 10 of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, with an emphasis on sponsorship. On the surface, these chapters seem to have a specific audience in mind. Chapter 8, to wives. Chapter 9, the family afterward. Chapter 10, to employers. What if I'm none of these things? How could these pages possibly apply to me? I should probably skip reading these chapters, don't you think? Well, today our speaker will give you a real cause to pause and rethink these thoughts. Digging into these chapters will unveil a deeper meaning and a greater perspective for you and your recovery. Joining us today, presenting on this very exciting, rich topic, is Marcella M. from Massachusetts. Marcella is truly dedicated to paying forward the joy of recovery by teaching enthusiastically from the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm so grateful to be able to present her today. Good morning, Marcella, and welcome to A Vision for You.
Morning, Melanie. Can you hear me well?
Very well. Very well.
Awesome. My name is Marcella. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater. So that was quite a presentation, quite an introduction. I'm going to give you some facts about my life, not to brag, but just to give hope to people who are just coming or are new to this program or to this meeting. I'm 54 years old. I'm 5'4". In my adult life in this height, I have weighed 211 pounds. And 78. When I was 211 pounds heavy in this very short frame, I still thought that my problem was not too terrible because I could still buy clothing in regular stores. And when I was 78 pounds skeleton is starving, I wanted to lose 3 more because 75 is more of a round number than 78. So I've suffered, you know, because of my disease. And my very first meeting of OA was in Mexico City in 1985. And back there and then we used to, the drug steps were a decoration and they were in English. And there were a decoration on the wall. And we didn't have the big book. I mean, it was available to us, but we didn't care to read it. And we did 3 meals a day with nothing in between, all kinds of food in moderation. I was a lot younger back then, but I have been on a diet since age 10. So I lost some weight and became so dependent at that meeting. And very quickly, within a year, somebody kicked me out. Somebody who had power kicked me out from the meeting because I was just too disruptive. And so that's what happens to a group that doesn't know the steps and doesn't know the tradition and don't read the book. People can be kicked out from the meeting and nobody gets recovered. I want to say I would love to tell you that there are many ways to recover from somebody like me. But I learned a very, very hard way that my one and only hope was to study and read and reread and just like turn the page after page and highlight and see different million colors and make notes and with another person, not in the solitude of my crazy mind because I am so tormented that I can twist the book and be convinced with a book in hand that it's okay for me to eat one cookie. Just one. But I have found enormous relief from this disease by reading the book with other people. So today, I'm still 5'4", and I weighed 130 pounds this morning even. I don't measure and weigh my food. I found it way more practical for me to just have a very, very detailed list of the foods that are safe for me. I also have volume. I never eat more than 2 cups of food at a time so that I don't stretch my stomach. Stretching my stomach and volume are a huge trigger for me. And I avoid a certain texture, like the crispy, crunchy texture. I avoid it because that has turned to be a trigger for me. So my last binge was February the 22nd of 2011. I lost a total of 50-something pounds, but I kept them lost, which that's a good thing. That will be a miracle big enough to praise what the higher power has done in my body, but that's not really a miracle. The miracle is that today, because of my work, I had to touch and see and be around foods that are poisonous to me. And I don't want them. I don't salivate. I don't stare at them. I don't feel sorry for myself because I cannot eat them. I don't think about them. And I just, they're not in my mind. They're not an issue anymore. And I'm hungry. And I'm very, very comfortable in a sad world. And life is grand. Life is just great. Life is interesting. Okay, so that's how my recovery looks today to give people hope. I also want to praise that this humility of the people that found, that started this meeting, because you need humility as a compulsive overeater to say, we don't need to reinvent the wheel. The wheel is running and rolling all over the world very smoothly. So why do we need to reinvent the wheel? Let's just open the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, whose experience nobody will ever match because, you know, that's the original fellowship, and that's where people have 8 years of experience. And some of the original people that were contemporary to Bill and Bob, some of them are still alive. And why reinvent the wheel, right? So I want to praise the humility and the practicality. My sponsor always says, if it's not practical, it's not spiritual. If it's not spiritual, it's not practical. So this meeting is so practical and so spiritual, and that's where I have found continuous abstinence that is happy, joyous, and free, as the big book promises us. So the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. So if you're an overeater and nothing more, thank God, right? Thank God I just have one substance to deal with. But you might ask, why in the world do I have to read this book? I mean, that enough that I read this book that talks about Christian men in the 1940s who were drunk and it's a book. You know, I participate with alcohol and art, and I think that just as a compulsive reader might alienate you, right? So it's bad enough that I have to translate constantly.
Excuse me, can you adjust your phone? You're breaking up really badly.
Thank you.
Let me take off the headphones, and maybe that'll help. Is this better? Hello?
Yes, that's much clearer. Thank you very much.
Okay, good. Okay, so let me see. Okay. So if you're just a compulsive overeater and you don't have problems with any other substance or behavior, so you might ask yourself, like, why in the world do I need to? It's bad enough that I have to translate the book From Alcohol to Food over and over and over again, because my alcohol is certain ingredients in certain foods or volume or circumstances as to when and where to eat, right? But the reality, too, is that in A Vision for You, many of us have recovered and have a very happy, comfortable abstinence by studying this book. So that explains why it's relevant to us to study the doctor's opinion, which we're doing right now, right, in the daily meeting, in the Monday through Friday meeting. So, of course, it makes sense to study the doctor's opinion because it enables me to make a list of my alcoholic foods and define what's abstinence to me and practice entire abstinence. So, yeah, I am willing to study the doctor's opinion. So in There is a Solution, I like the title, There is a Solution. Yeah, that gives me hope. I'll study that chapter too. More about alcoholism, you know, the stories of the people that relapse, that people that having made the beginning, they go and they have queer ideas of fun, or they say, oh, I've been abstinent for 3 months, I can handle one cookie. Or people who have been abstinent for years, and they say, it's my time to relax, where's the ice cream, right? So yeah, I'm willing to study that. In We Agnostics, well, yeah, even if you're a completely ultra-Orthodox religious person, all of us are agnostics to a certain extent because the experience of a higher power that we're having in our lives is not doing anything for our compulsive disease when it comes to food. So, yeah, I guess I'll study We Agnostics, even if I'm a religious person. And if not a religious person, well, of course I should, because how am I going to get over this higher power thing, right? How it works? Well, there are a lot of people that just study how it works because I'm an impatient person. I want to get results now. I want to feel comfortable now. So, yeah, I'll study how it works. Into Action, well, that sounds a little tiring, but I'll read it because, you know, it's step five, and well, I have to do it anyway, so I'll study Into Action. And Working with Others, well, yeah, because I want to be a sponsor, a recovery sponsor, passing it on. And if my life depends on it and depends on my ability to pass on the message, yeah, I mean, I think it's in my best interest to study Working with Others. But to wives and the family afterward and to employers, well, I don't have a wife and I'll never get one. So why should I study to wives? And the family afterward, well, I'm recovered and I did all my amends in step 9, and I'm living in 9, 10, and 12, so I don't think I need a family afterwards. And to employers, listen, I'm an employee, so I'm not a business person, and I'm not a business owner, so I don't have anybody to employ, so that chapter certainly doesn't apply to me. So that has been my attitude towards the book as a whole. You know, I just open the chapters and study the ones that I feel are relevant to my disease, and I skip the other ones. So just to put everything into context, let's do a teeny little bit of history of where this book comes from and how people used to use it. So the book was published in 1939, but by 1939, there were 100 people, 100 men and one woman, 100 men and one woman that were already recovered, and they were sober. So up until then, it was just oral tradition. It was just like the oral way of doing the steps. So the big book was published in 1939 with a lot of effort, a common effort to put everything together, everything that they had been doing so far that was working, that created that wonderful community of the first 100 that were keeping each other sober by getting together and reading the big book and sponsoring others. So back there in the 40s, there was just one meeting, you know, in Akron, Ohio, one meeting where Dr. Bob lived, and the meeting was on Wednesday night, and there were a few copies of the big book, and that book was very expensive. It was not free like we just give them away right now. So if you wanted to sponsor somebody, you borrow the book on Wednesday night and you memorize. There were not photocopies or smartphones just to take pictures of the steps or anything. So you would memorize some paragraphs so that you could sponsor others and then return the one and only copy back to the meeting, right? And then the meeting, how did the meeting look like? Well, the meeting was, it was in somebody's house, you know, in this case it was in Dr. Bob's kitchen, and everybody was invited. So the drunk, you know, the alcoholic, will come along with his wife. And then some other wives were welcomed without the alcoholic husband. The wives were welcome to get relief from the obsession of alcohol, even though she didn't drink the alcohol. It was just like, if you're suffering because of alcoholism, you're welcome in our midst. You're part of us. Come and join us. So some wives would attend without their husbands because they had been affected and they wanted to stop suffering. And the alcoholics would go and they would have their meeting, right? But all the wives were there. The wives were there. So the family was there. So actually, a lot of our early history has been told by the wives of the people that got sober. Why? Because the wives were the very first ones affected by the sobriety of the husbands. The wife is the closest person that would witness the absolute miracle of somebody getting sober. So Henrietta, who was the wife of alcoholic number three, she's the one who was really, really close to Dr. Bob and was able to quote him like on and off. Why? Because the message was different for her. It was the same message. It was, you don't need to suffer anymore because of alcoholism. Whether you drink the alcohol or not, alcohol is ruining your life, but you don't need to suffer anymore because there is a higher power. How do you get the higher power? Come to our meetings and have a spiritual experience. So you see how the wives were so, so close at the very beginning when the first 100 got sober. Anyway, So that's a little bit of history and how the meetings were at the very, very beginning. Now, let's fast forward to now, here and now. I cannot say enough how lucky we are to have a vision for you. There's nothing like a vision for you. Like the careful, detailed study, line by line, sometimes even word by word, within the context of our compulsive overeating. And it almost sounds like what does one thing have to do with another? When I first came to OA in 1985, I just wanted to wear beautiful clothing. I just wanted to be fit and slim. To be honest with you, I didn't have the honest desire to stop overeating. I wanted to overeat and don't have any consequences. That's what I really wanted. Well, it took me decades, really decades, of trying many other things besides the Big Book until I finally got it. I didn't get it. It was given to me. It was granted to me. This thing is like the Cinderella dress. Like, I go to bed, abstinence sober clean. I wake up, a compulsive overeating, in need for fellowship and the Big Book, if I want to remain sober and abstinent. So this is what happened to me a year ago. I was in my face-to-face meeting, and we were beginning to study To the Wise. It was the beginning of that chapter. And the first time that we usually, historically, when we study that chapter, we just roll our eyes in contempt. Oh, I can't believe it. Ay, ay, ay. Here comes To the Wives in that patriarchal, antiquated language that makes you laugh. And here we go again. And of course we know that Lois wanted to write this chapter and Bill didn't let her. And they started in a big, big, huge fight. And then Lois grabbed her resentment and a coffee pot and started Al-Anon. So why in the world should I read this? I mean, it doesn't seem like, it doesn't have any relevance to me. So in that spirit, we were starting to read the chapter, you know, to make fun of it, to just like read just like the whole page, just like without commenting or nothing, because it doesn't apply to me. What do the wives have to do anything with my compulsive overeating? It just does. I don't see the light. I don't see the connection. Anyway, so we were about to begin when somebody who we didn't know at all came to our meeting, and that person looked very distressed and very troubled. So we just assumed that person was an addict. No, he was a spouse. This person was a spouse of somebody who had the addiction. And this person was in horrible, horrible distress. And this despair and horror and dread was written in this person's eyes. And he told us the story that how his partner just couldn't and wouldn't, and despite the efforts. And we did something different. Instead of just saying, this meeting is not for you, just go to Al-Anon. We said, well, we are going to read to the wives, so you might get something out of it, so why don't you stay with us and read? So here we are, a real wife of Alcoholics Anonymous, and studying the wives with us. And then the magic happened. My brain opened, completely, entirely opened, and I said, oh my God. I am living on 9, 10, 11, and 12. I've made my amends. I pray every day. I meditate. I'm asking it as asking one can get. And I'm living on my side 4. And this is the first time that I see for real how my behavior has affected the closest person to me. Now, there's a paragraph into the wife that says, although we've been talking just about men, right, this can apply to anybody. This can apply to anybody who's tied by, who is related by ties of blood and affection to others. So ties by blood, by ties by blood and affection, it's on page 104 where it says, in the second paragraph, in the third paragraph, in page 104, if you want to follow me, it says, what the wives say will apply to nearly everyone bound by ties or blood or affection to an alcoholic, or in this case, to a compulsive overeater like me. So my brain just exploded, and I said, whoa, whoa, whoa. This chapter is about me and everybody who has loved me through my addiction and through my recovery. And it's about me and everybody that I love now. Do you know how much you love your sponsees? How you pray for them and you struggle with them and you do the step one with them and you pray with them and then you go obsessively to the book with them, and how much you love your sponsees and you just hope that they will recover like you, and then they relapse and your heart is broken. If you're a sponsor, you have had that experience. So when you are a sponsor and you have had that experience, the whole chapter might just be titled, to the sponsors. We go through the ringer with a sponsee. And the big book says exactly what to do with your sponsee. It says, well, I'll let you read it because it's really, really cool. But among many, many other interesting things, it says on page 108, there are 4 different classifications of sponsees, right? And strangely enough, the compulsive overeater that has a high bottom, and I mean we know all of them, right? That they just want to fit a little better in their fashionable clothes, and they can take it or leave it alone. Those are the most difficult to sponsor, because they don't have the motivation of the gift of desperation, right? And as the scale goes down, you know, to the husband number 4. Instead of saying, forget it, just drop it, that person will never get better, it gives you so much hope. It says, listen, this is not up to you. It's not up to your eloquence or your knowledge about the big book, of how many paragraphs you have memorized, of how many years you have abstinence. It's up to God. Just get together with that person and read the big book and just drill it. So that happened to us when we had that that experience, right? Now I see things differently. Sometimes I hope that how we would read. Sometimes I think how we would read the book is, I mean, because majorly we are women. We were largely women in over years anonymous. How would we read to the wives if one of our husbands were here or one of our spouses were here? You know, relating how our endless dieting, back and forth, and endless spree on shopping for clothes that would fit, whether it's size XX large or size XX small when I'm starving, and how were they affected by my inability to be intimate or romantic because I can't stand my image. I just don't feel sexy, and if I don't feel sexy, nobody in my household should, because I just can't deal with it. I cannot even think of it. So that's what all of that I got when I read The Wives. So when I read The Wives, I said, wow, so maybe my amends are incomplete or could be better. My amends could be better because I got a complete different understanding of how I have affected the person closest to me, which is my husband, because he lives with me, and we eat together, or we do not eat together, and my hesitation about him taking pictures of me with the family, and my self-image issues, and my self-obsession with look and image, or asking him, you know what, you adapt to me because I'm abstinent now, and adapt to my schedule and adapt to my volume and adapt to my recipes. And how I have affected my spouse. So The Wives was not only useful to me to sponsor other people, but to refine my amends, especially my living amends, because eating is a social act anyway. And I live with people, and I live surrounded by people. So that's what I got from The Wife. And then the family afterwards. So by then, you know, our real wife of Alcoholics Anonymous was working with you know, the alcoholic, the addict. And they were dealing, you know, with the early recovery. And is this person really going to get well? Am I getting my hopes too high? Because, you see, alcohol, whether or my compulsory eating, my excess of food, whether I eat it or not, it affects the whole fabric of our community. Now, for the sake of our study, let's call the sponsor and the sponsee a little family. So I'm a sponsor and you're the sponsee, or I have my sponsor and I'm the sponsee. And then we create, because that's what happens, we create like a family, like a trio of sponsors, like a thing, right? Like yesterday, I had the privilege to go to an OA convention, and I had the pleasure of seeing my sponsor, my sponsor who is a member of A Vision for You, live, and it's just so awesome to see some of us, you know, live, and to see that our voices matter our bodies. We are living in beautiful, healthy, radiant bodies with sparkling eyes, you know, just like the big book says. And I was there with some of my sponsees. And so we're like a little family, right? My sponsor and my sponsees, and we get together and we rejoice in our recovery. And we're like a little family. So the family afterwards, if you read the chapter like that, or with a wife that who's just struggling, is this person going to be recovered or not, you get a whole new sense of how the addiction affects other people and how we really, really walk together this walk. It's not that I'm recovered and I've gained status over you. That's not what it is at all. Nobody has the power to anoint somebody recovered. We are just witness walking the same walk, hand in hand, together as peers, and the sponsor just witnessed that the higher power yet again has granted recovery to another person. And whether the higher power is religious or not, it doesn't matter. the magic happens again. And so we are the family afterward, if you can tell. We are the family afterward. A Vision for You is a family, and we are a family. And we struggle, you know, with our growing pains. Like, I just recently, we had to reset the phone list because we have, like, I don't know, like 3,000 members. And we don't know if they're with us or not. We are the family afterward. We are the people that are tied by blood and affection and by deep care, and we have the need to pass the message effectively if we are able to keep this going. And it has to be going, because have you noticed around how many people need this message and this recovery? So that's what I got from the family afterward, after I met the real wife. Now, to the employers, by now my face-to-face group was on fire, right? Because we just seen, well, like, we just discovered gold, right? Like, where have these chapters been, these obscure chapters? There was no light in these obscure chapters, and now there's a lot of light. So we approached to employers with a very different attitude. Up until then, you know, we were kind of like the, you know, like the liberal Bostonian, you know, avant-garde kind of people that say, maybe we should edit the big book because it's getting antiquated. But after this, you know, we say, wow, no wonder these people, the first 100, were witnessing these chapters, were living these chapters. That's why they wrote them. That's why they made it to the big book. So to employers begins with horrible, horrible stories about suicide, right? They're very scary, and how people in utter despair over this disease just say, I can't deal with this anymore. Nobody will ever help me. And people just kill themselves. And I mean, sadly enough, I've been long enough in OA to see people literally dying, or losing their limbs to diabetes, and losing mobility to morbid obesity, losing their sight to diabetic shocks. And just some people just died. I mean, just like 2 weeks ago, somebody in my very, very close circle, this person died. She started a crash diet with the help of some medication, and her heart couldn't take it. And she was my age, and she died. So to employers, it's a very, very somber reminder that this is a killer. This is a killer. And some people will end up killing themselves in despair. And then it talks about money. So, and finances, you know, and productivity as an employer. And, you know, when I made my amends, my financial amends, I made a very detailed, you know, inventory of all the money that I spent on food that I didn't need because my body didn't need it to survive, but also about the money that I spent dieting and with other methods to try to lose the weight and keep it off. But I failed to see all the money that I failed to make, the productivity that I lost because of my obsession, the lousy lack of ambition in everything professional. And because I was just so consumed with myself and my weight and my size and my BMI and my carb intake and my fat intake and my look and my image and the pictures of me, that I failed to succeed in business and in my profession. So again, you know, to employers was a big help, and I just saw things that I've never seen reading them before that completely apply to my compulsive overeating and my happy recovery as it is today. And then I say, well, wait a second, employer, I read that word before, you know, doesn't it say there, like in step 3, that we have a new employer, and he's the one who calls the shots, and he's the one to be praised for my beautiful recovery. And he's the one who has the power to anoint somebody recover and to grant easy freedom from obsession of our disease. Well, let me look at that, right? So to the employer, So this is a job. There's a reason why we call it 12 steps, the work of the 12 steps. Let's do the work. Let's do some step work, right? It is a job. Actually, this is the most important job of my life. My membership in A Vision for You and my AA program, that's the most important job that I will ever have in my life. So just for the sake of this study that gathered us here today, let's say that I'm an employee and my sponsee is my employer. And that's the hierarchy. If you study the 12 concepts, there is a hierarchy in these gigs of 12 steps and 12 traditions. And the most important person for us is the person that doesn't even know that there's a vision for you. And then, right, because we need to reach that person. We need to go to the eating disorder centers and the hospitals and the gyms and the diet clubs and say, well, maybe not, but you get the idea, right, to go and get the person that needs this message. And that's the most important person. That's our boss. And then right after there, the newcomer in our phone line, that's our boss. We put all this show and this magnificent study so that the person that is a newcomer can have the chance to recover. And our personal recovery, the maintenance of my personal recovery, depends on my ability to retain, to attract and retain that sponsee and say, I'm here for you. Let me do everything that I can do to help you. And then, of course, the person that is in our midst and is still suffering, is still struggling, is relapsing. You know, I was a chronic relapser in a way from 1985 to 2011. If there's somebody that has taken from OA, that'll be me. I've taken. And I always had it wrong. I said, if I only had a good sponsor. I always had a good sponsor. All of my sponsors were good. I was the one who needed to adjust. My attitude was the one who needed to adjust. Now I'm convinced that I have the best sponsor that I want to ever get. She's so patient with me, and our dependence is not in sponsorship. Our dependence, our true dependence, is on the higher power that continues to reveal himself to us through the work of these steps. So as I said to the employer, so I have a boss. I have somebody who is above me. That's anybody who needs this message. And will I use everything that is written here so that I can present my message effectively, so that I can keep this line going, so that I can transmit the message effectively, so that I can remain alive. So there's that to employers. And so now that I see the three chapters as a whole, to wives, the family afterwards, and to employers, now I see how this disease has affected not only myself. I mean, I already knew, right, that it had affected my body, my mind, my looks, the shape of my body, the obsession of my mind, and every single relationship that I had, because I did my 9-step already, right? So, but now that I read these chapters, I can see that what I eat matters. How many times have we heard that we are what we eat? It affects not only our bodies and our minds, it affects our families, it affects our society, it affects our economy. What we eat and what we don't eat matters a lot. The fact that I abstain today from all my alcoholic foods creates a ripple effect that affects the whole fabric of society. The fact that I'm granted the opportunity to try to pass a message affects the world that I live in. It is not a little irrelevant fact or act, an individual isolated act, if I see a cookie on top of a table and I don't pick it up. It affects the world in which I live. It is very important. My abstinence is linked to my society, to my community, to my family, to my spouse. Now, took the word, another word about humility. We always say in my group, I know, the only thing I know about humility is that I don't have it. Because as soon as you know you have humility, then you're not humble enough. So, humility. So, you know how sometimes people say that, you know, such and such, this person has these credentials and these credentials to pass the message and not. Let me tell you, there's something that I've learned. I have the privilege to live in a community that has people who have been around for 54 years, 57 years, practicing reading this book, you know, and I have seen groups come and go and people in and out and whole communities, whole big book communities, you know, flourish and blossom and carry on or not. And there's this piece always, humility. Nobody's an expert in the big book. That doesn't exist. There's not such a thing. Nobody is an expert. We're experts in our own experience. Now, little detail about the big book. So we have the English version, right? And we study the fourth edition. But every language has their own stories. Like the version in German has stories. The personal stories are written in German in Germany, and the Spanish stories are stories about Mexico City and Madrid and Colombia. And every group of AA and everybody who's reading the big book keeps creating the revelation, if you may, like the disclosure. You know how it says in 164, more will be revealed to us? That is happening right here, right now, to people who speak different languages and understand the big book from a different point of view, from their own culture, with their own, you know, customs, with their own religious beliefs, in their own language, in their own land, in their own foods that grow in their own place of the world. So we need all of us together to put all the jigsaw puzzles together. We will never get bored. We will never know it all, because this thing, this big book, is slowly wrapping the whole entire planet in this new awareness that there is such a thing as a solution for my compulsive overeating problem, and that it matters, that I affect this world that I'm living in. And it's a great privilege to be alive in this generation in which the higher power has granted this solution. Okay. So, as much as I would like to tell that now that we have paid attention to the wives and to the families and to the employers, that now we're done, well, we're not done. This is just the beginning, right? Now that I read the whole entire book and that I have gained awareness of how my individual personal behavior affects everything, for better if I'm recovered and passing on the message, or for worse if I keep picking up. Now I'm ready to study the traditions, and the traditions are the only reason why we'll stay together in harmony, and the reasons why we still can dial the phone number, and there is a vision for you, and there's a message right there, right? So we will never be done. We need unity above all. We need to remain together and to keep, as soon as you find, you know, a pearl of awareness, a little pocket of consciousness, I encourage you to jump in. I said, I found something. Let me share it with you. And we're all in this together. And I don't have anything else to say, but I understand that there's a period for questions and answers. And thank you so much. And I pass.
Thank you, Marcella. Thank you very much. That was just a real awakening of a broader perspective towards application of these chapters, and certainly in my life, appreciate it very much, very thorough. Yeah, this is the time, if you have some extra time to share with us, that we'd like to open it up to the broader audience to ask some questions of your presentation. Do you have some time?
Sure, I'm here.
Oh, good. Thank you so much. So So who would like to ask Marcella a question about her presentation this morning? Press star 1 to unmute your phone.
Hello.
Fuji.
Good morning. Good morning, Sue.
Good morning, Melanie.
Good morning.
Good
morning.
Like
you have a question for Marcella.
Beverly. Okay.
Okay, should I go?
Yes, please. Uh-huh. Your question for Marcella?
Okay. It's Suji, recovered in Greater Philadelphia. Thank you so much, Marcella, from Boston. That's a freedom city, too, for me. Anyway, I thought I'd amuse myself, and maybe I'll amuse you and maybe not, because I think I was probably the last person to sign on, and I heard your parting words here, that we need to remain together. We are all in this together. And I thought of this because I was building my priorities, and I missed this because I was sitting at the table with my dear one, and my life has been recentered because he has a potentially life-threatening and potentially extremely treatable form of cancer. And I've had to make my priorities reshaped. And this is an interesting part of my life process. And I've heard a lot of your story before, and I have a feeling it relates to yours too. And this is that in our recovery, we're told that we should take our recovery first and build the rest of our lives around it. And now I'm in this curious spot where I have to take the rest of my life first and build my recovery around it. Which is kind of a circular process or a spiraling process, because I think you take the rest of your life first in a crisis, build your recovery around it, and then build your life around your recovery again. It goes on and on. And I wonder if you can comment on that in your own recovery process. That's it. I pass.
Thank you so much. Oh, I'm thrilled. Yes, that's exactly what I feel right now. At the very beginning, just to save my life, I have to save my life around my recovery because I just need to remain alive, period, right? And yeah, and that's, you know, where's my meeting first and where's my recording first and where's my step work? And then my husband can wait and my family can wait and my job can wait because it's an emergency intervention. Now, I want to comment a little bit about the rhythm. At the very, very beginning, the first original people did the steps in a few hours. They were slightly different in Akron than in Cleveland. I think that in Cleveland they had 5 classes before you attended your first meeting, and in Akron, Ohio, you had just 3 to 7 hours of step work. So before you enter your first meeting, you have done the whole entire steps in a few hours. It was nothing like the length that we do now. Like sometimes I hear people writing 17 notebooks of a 4-step. Let me tell you what's the problem with that. The problem that I see with that is that if you write 17 notebooks on your 4-step and you have 3,700 resentments and the same amount of fears, it will take hours and hours and hours and hours, probably months, for somebody to listen to your 4-step. And that will be very difficult to replicate. So if your life depends on passing on the message, it's better, it's in the best interest of everybody that we learn how to do this rather quickly. So the very first 100 that we covered, do you think that they recover really well? I think that they recover really well because those people are our models for recovery. So all of them did their 4-step in a few minutes. How did they manage to do a 4-step in a few minutes? Well, you just talk about what's most pressing, right? Like the big, horrible pebble on your stone that is bleeding, or like even like the mortal wound that is bleeding and is going to kill you. And then you refine your amends. How do you refine your amends? In the steps that we just studied, to the wives, the family afterward, and to employers. And it's circular. I just love the way that you said, like in circles. It's a circle. First recovery around my life, then my life around recovery. Because if my love is going to be guided by love and service, who am I going to service? just a vision for you people, and that's going to be my service? No, because I'm married, and I have two cats, and I'm a teacher, and I have tons of students and their families, and then I have friends, and then I have a mom-in-law who's very, you know, delicate. She's aging. So, of course, I'm going to be serviced in my life, in my life. I just love the visual that you made, like the circle. It's the circle. It's the circle. Thank you. Thank you for learning with me.
Thank you, Sue. Thanks, Marcella.
Thank you.
Who else is next for the next question?
Hello,
this
is Beverly.
Beverly, if you have a question for Marcella, please. Your question?
Yes, I have a question.
Thank you so much.
Yes, I was very interested in what you had to share about the wives and the community of people who are close to you. And I live with my sister. I'm not married. I'm a single person. I don't have kids. And I live with my sister. We share many things in common, including financial responsibilities. And now I have been having very negative thoughts about my sister. And this meeting was a real eye-opener. And I'm saying to myself now, how do I right the wrongs that have happened between me and my sister? Because although we're not fighting like cat and dog now, there's this deep-seated resentment. And as I said, how does one make amends to someone who has stood beside you through thick and thin like those wives did in all your acting out and in all your strange behavior? And yeah, I'm going to end it there. Thank you.
Thank you, Beverly. Marcella, were you able to hear the question?
I think I did. Well, my humble suggestion to you would be to get another compulsive overeater and to read to one another these chapters that we just read, the wives. And because to wives, it could also be to sisters. It could be to sons, to children, to friends, right? And learn from one another. Study the chapters little by little as we do in A Vision for You. And I'm sure that you will get many, many intuition and inspiration from one another as to how to go about any problem, really, any relational problem. Yeah, so I hope that helps.
Thank you, Beverly. Thanks, Marcella. Anyone else with a question for Marcella?
Yes, this is my very first meeting ever on this, and I was wondering how you go about getting a sponsor. Do you give numbers out?
We do have an opportunity to do that. If you can hold on with us, maybe after the meeting is closed, we can get your information and give that out to the group.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Anyone with a question for Marcella? Press star 1 on your phone keypad. That will unmute you to be able to ask your question.
Mary Lynn.
Hi, good morning, Mary Lynn. Go ahead with your question.
Hi, thank you very much, Marcella. Mary Lynn, Connecticut. We met at the Framingham retreat last October, and as you said, it's wonderful putting the faces together with all those lovely voices. My question is about making amends and touching base back on what a family member said, particularly both of my sons. So when I made my amends last year, things came up. Do you let them go and wait for them to come back up again, or look at them and make mention and kind of try to see if something could be worked through or put it in God's hands? I don't know. Have you had any experience like that? Thank you.
Thanks a lot. Well, that's what I liked these last chapters. If you schedule a sponsor or another peer, another compulsive overeater, and you study the family afterwards, it says over and over again how the amends process is not something like magical. Sometimes it is. Sometimes it is. But for the most part, our amends, our living amends, we have to be patient. It comes with time. It also says, you know, how the spiritual life that doesn't include our family obligations is not perfect, after all. That's on page 129. It also talks about the family that at the very beginning, at the first days, it talks about days. It doesn't talk about years or months. Days of convalescence, it's understandable that we do nothing but OA, right? But then we need to turn our attention to the people that we have neglected. And it says on page 127 that it is well that us, that we should exert ourselves in at home, that is not likely to get far in any direction if we fail to show unselfishness and love under our own roof. So it seems to me that you're aware that, you know, certain family relationships have been affected by your compulsive overeating, whether it be by directly by food or by your thinking or your behavior. And if you study with another person, the family afterwards, I'm sure, I'm convinced that you will get many ways, many ideas, enlightenment as to how to leave your living amends. Of course, if you're like me, and it seems like you're like me, I want like 100% certainty. I want to know, should I call? Should I send a letter? Should I send a gift? Should I send flowers? Should I insist? Should I leave them alone? And, you know, that's impossible to have, because relationships are alive and they keep moving. While I was acting out with my food and my compulsive overeating or my compulsive not eating, people were affected, and now they moved on without me, and now I want to re-enter their life. So I strongly encourage you to study the family afterward with another person, and I'm sure that you will get some light on your family relationships. I hope that helps.
Thank you, Mary Lynn. Anyone else with a question for Marcella?
Good morning. This is Susan in Tampa.
Good morning, Susan. What's your question?
Hi, Marcella. Good morning. Marcella, I've been in the program like yourself since the 80s, back and forth. How did you, right now I'm working with a sponsor, finished step 3 and moving on to 4, but I've always struggled with the concept of a higher power. Honestly, I will just say higher power, and I struggle. How did you develop a relationship and a concept of a higher power? Because I don't want to relapse again, and I know it's extremely important to have that connection. I pass.
Thank you. Well, that is such a good question. I have direct experience with that. I am a religious person. I don't struggle with that. I was born with that. I don't take any merit with that, because I was born with that. It was granted to me. And I have the privilege and the, just like the blessing, to sponsor people who don't believe in a higher power. And I'm here to tell you, it works. It absolutely works. For some reason that I'll never understand, I've had some success with scientists that are agnostic, that don't believe in a higher power. And I have a couple of people that I have sponsored successfully. And we stay in our same place, right? They are agnostics, and their thinking is, for the most part, a scientific approach. And I stay in mind, I'm convinced in my mind that there is the other who is created me and sustains me, and within my religion, right? That's the religion of my parents. And we're both recovered. So this thing is a lot bigger than, it's a lot wider. I want to choose my words carefully. This is not a religion, but it can include your religious beliefs. This is a way of thinking, and it only happens if we get together. It really doesn't matter if your sponsor is a believer or a non-believer, because we have the big book. I just want to stress again, this is so easy. It's so simple. It's not time-consuming. It doesn't take forever. It happens quickly. It's fast. And once you have it, most of my, I have witnessed, again, like two or three times, when sponsees are recovered already, like you see the sparkle in your eye, you see the fire in the voice, they're abstinent. They're sober, they're clean, they're walking, but of course they're still like a little unsure because they're just newly sober recovered, right? And they look at me, you know, like a hungry puppy saying, assure me that I will never relapse. Well, what's the assurance? Just keep doing what you're doing and then you can be sober forever or clean forever, or abstinent forever, right? So there is a joke in AA, like what's the secret for long-time sobriety? Don't drink, don't die. So what is the secret of my for me, you know, I'm a baby in a way. I've been just abstinent for 3 years, 8 months, and 4 days. Not that I'm counting, right? But it, to me, it's really, really long. It's the longest I've ever been abstinent and happy. And I'm not worried that I won't keep it because it's comfortable. I'm not struggling. I'm not hungry, thank you, God. And I'm just good. So I don't fear. So what was I going to say? So the higher power is kind of like the water. It doesn't matter if you believe in water or not, you still need to drink. It doesn't matter what opinion you have about water. That's a better way. It doesn't matter if you have an opinion about water or not. You absolutely need the effect of water in your body. You do need the effect. It doesn't matter if you love water and you have your house decorated with pictures of water and you have the CD recording of the sounds of water, you still need water. It doesn't matter if you ignore the water or if you don't care. It doesn't matter if you drink hidden water that is hidden in sodas or teas or coffee. It doesn't matter. Or in fruits, you still need the effect of the water. So it really doesn't matter. It's a phenomenon. It's something like, there was this physics professor that I once sponsored, and she called the higher power covalent bond. And she explained to me how molecules are irresistibly attracted to one another. I think that's the covalent bond. And the atoms are irresistibly attracted to one another. And that irresistible attraction, we call that the higher power. And your body is made of atoms and molecules. So there's your higher power. Join us. Recover. I hope that helps.
Thank you, Susan. Anyone else with a question for Marcella?
This is Chelsea.
Hi, good morning, Chelsea. Your question.
Hi, Melanie. Hi, and thanks for your service, Marcella. I really appreciated the conversation about how there's different sects within OA, but we're all studying the same 12 steps. Do you have experience working with people who are so committed to the Brown Book, the OA 12 and 12, and still using your big book to take them through the process? Can you share some experiences, some suggestions for how we keep the integrity of the message and still work with folks who are committed to only using the OA 12 and 12? Thanks.
Marcella, do you want to press star 1 on your phone keypad to be heard?
Melanie and Chelsea, I'm afraid to tell you that my phone died while you were asking your question, which I'm sure is very interesting. Please forgive me and repeat the question again.
Absolutely. I was asking the question of working with our fellows from the portion of the OA fellowship that are committed to only using the OA 12 and 12. the Brown Book, and they just came out with a new edition. And my question was, have you had some experience keeping the integrity of your 12 steps of the Big Book and still reaching out to these other fellows to walk them through this process when they're committed to just using the Brown Book, the 12 and 12? Thanks. And I did thank you for your service and everything, too.
Josie, that's such an important question. That is such an important question. There was a time in which I binged on OA literature. I bought every single thing that they, you know, published, and I even translated a lot into Spanish when I was living in Mexico. And the result of that in myself, I just speak for myself, was horrible. I got so confused, and I felt pulled out in all different directions, and I didn't know what abstinence meant, and I didn't know what recovery meant. And I was just getting excuse after excuse after excuse to relapse and relapse and relapse. Now that I'm, you know, I'm 54 and that I really, really hit the most horrific hard bottom in my body, you know what? I just have one body. I just have 24 hours a day. I cannot afford to have too many addictions. I just have one addiction. Now, my alcohol, it's called many ingredients, you know, many food ingredients, and alcohol. But I just have one body. So what happens in my body is not consistent what happens in our fellowships, right? Like, I see a lot of effort to differentiate one fellowship from the other one. And that's what I'm completely loyal, and I'm willing to do whatever service I can do for A Vision for You, because A Vision for You is humble enough to open the Big Book and nothing else. So for me, Chelsea, for me, just for me, for this compulsive overeater who has suffered so much, so, so much because of food addiction, so much that I became an alcoholic trying to control my food intake. Do you know that I became an alcoholic because I learned that if I drank enough, I didn't need to eat that much? And I there was a time in my late 20s when I much rather be in a psychiatric ward mixing amphetamines with alcohol and very, very skinny skeletony than being fat and being outside in the world functioning. There was a time. That's where my compulsive reading took me. And now, what am I? An alcoholic, a pill addicted person, or a compulsive reader? I don't know, and I don't care. The Big Book works for me. I have 24 hours a day and a very, very busy, enjoyable, wonderful life. Thank you, God. Thank you. And thank you, Vision, for you. The only thing that I read these days is the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And the way that I sponsor is reading the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. For the sake of my recovery, I don't think that we need any, my experience is that you don't need any extra pamphlet or any, to download any graphics or to, you don't need any extra material. Everything is there in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Every word is precious. Every paragraph is relevant. The stories are wonderful. From cover to cover, everything is relevant to me. And how long is it going to take me for me to keep finding stuff in the Big Book? Well, I'm not done yet. When I get bored to tears from the Big Book, then maybe I'll open another book. I hope that I won't. And you know what? I don't think I will. Because the Big Book always takes a new shape when I read it with a different person. It's like water. Like you pour water in a container with a different shape, and it's still water, but it takes a different shape. So every single time that I read the Big Book with a different person, it takes a different flavor and shape. And so I don't think I'll get bored. I'm just so grateful that I found this book that works for me. So I'll just stick to that. You know, I'm done. I'm done with other literature. This is what works for me. This is what I'm going to do. Thank you, Chelsea.
Thank you, Chelsea. Anyone else with a question for Marcella?
This is Kathy, Melanie in Boston. May I ask a question?
Yes. Good morning, Kathy Kay. Yes.
Thank you. Thanks so much, Marcella. I really enjoyed listening to you today, and you gave me a lot of new ideas about how to make use of the Big Book. I have a question about sponsoring. I've been sponsoring with the Big Book for about 2 years now, and I am wrestling with whether we read together every word in the big book or whether I ask my sponsee to read the doctor's opinion and underline what's important and circle words she doesn't understand. And then we have a meeting in which she tells me what she underlined, what it meant to her. So, in other words, I'm distinguishing between reading every word together and using a slightly different process, which might save us a little bit of time and allow me to sponsor more individuals. So I just thought I'd ask how you actually do it. Thank you.
Thank you for the question. That's a really good question. So if I heard well, you've been sponsoring the same person for 2 years. And if you look at the list, at the phone list of A Vision for You, you will see the ocean of people that has already found us, but many of them don't have sponsors. So,
excuse me, I didn't say that. I said I've been sponsoring a number of people
over the two-year
period. Yeah.
I understand now. Okay.
Yeah.
So. Everybody is different in my experience. So people approach and say, can you please sponsor me? So what I do now is that I ask them a few questions, right? Some people, the way that they ask you questions, you say, I don't think you're ready. So you just think, I just give a vague answer, frankly. And I say, well, let's figure this out. Maybe it'll happen, maybe it'll not, right? Not only because you say, yes, I sponsor you, that means that it will happen. Like a lot of time people say, can you sponsor me? And then you say yes, and then they just don't follow. Do you know how many times I've read the doctor's opinion with people? You start reading the doctor's opinion like with 20 people, and then you get to page 30 with maybe 10, and you get to page 47 with 7, and to page 63 with like 3, and to 164 you end up with like 1. So most people don't follow through. So that's what happens in my experience. Now, the other thing that I have found that I absolutely love, and it's very, very effective, is if you have access to the recording of the big book, it takes, most chapters take 20 to 25 minutes to be listened to. And so I have the CDs in my car. I'm not a big book thumper. I'm a big book junkie. So I have the CDs in my car, and I pop the CDs in my car. And when I commute from work to home and home to work, I listen to 2 chapters a day. Is that wonderful? And then I have an app in my smartphone that has the audio of the big book. So you're taking your walk, you're walking your dog, or you're cleaning the house, or you're cooking, or whatever, and you can listen to the chapters. And then sometimes, I have the tendency to wake up sometimes about 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning. I taught myself to listen to a chapter, and that puts me to sleep. So those are the soothing, familiar words that put me to sleep. And that is not, that only is not a time saver, but it's also a wonderful way to learn the big book. So what I ask my sponsees to do these days is, before we tackle the big book, is to listen to the recording and have the big book in front of them and underline whatever they see fit. And so you're learning from 2 avenues, right? You're visually seeing the printed words and you're listening to the sounds of the book. And sometimes I do that. Like yesterday for this presentation, I listened to the 3 chapters with my audio. And I open my big book, and I underline things that I wanted to comment, and I didn't use it at all, but I guess the message was there because I was not short of words. But there are many, many ways to study the big book, and all of them are fabulous. And we don't need any extra material. We have the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, the original experience of the first 100. What else do we need? I hope that helps.
Thank you, Kathy. Anyone else with a question for Marcella this morning?
Yes, I was wondering if they say you have an allergy
to the body from alcohol, and people cannot drink alcohol because they have an allergy. But where does it say in the big book that you have an allergy, like to sugar, flour, or pasta, or whatever? How do you know that food is the same as alcohol?
Thank you for your question. Can I get your name and the first initial of your last name, please?
Yes, Sue B.
Sue B. Okay, good morning. Thanks. Marcella?
What a good question, because actually there are two places that I can think of, and many there are more. There are two places in the Bible that says that sugar has the same effect. There is, I forgot the chapter, but it says like, I think it's Working with Others, where it says that many of us have found relief from the desire, the craving of alcohol by eating some sugar, some candy, and that some of us carry chocolate in our pocket. Do you remember, Melanie, where that is written? That is that many of us have...
I don't, but I can absolutely support the fact that that's true.
It is true, right? Where it says, like,
yes.
There. So that this is 1939, right? And now we know, just do a search online, and you see that alcohol is a sugar. Alcohol is a sugar. And sugar turns into alcohol. I know how to make alcohol with pineapple skin and sugar. It turns into alcohol. The other way around. You ingest alcohol, it turns into sugar in your body. So if you read the doctor's opinion carefully, alcohol is very subtle, just like the big book says. Alcohol is subtle, is very subtle. It disguises, it's like a little demon, you know, like the big bad wolf that covers himself with a skin of a sheep. That's alcohol, and that's sugar. Sugar turns into alcohol. Alcohol turns into sugar. To me, it's not a mistake that the big book says alcohol, the word alcohol. You might think that you're not an alcoholic, but we are alcoholics. What is our form of alcohol? Sugar turns into alcohol. And then even, you have never been on sugar, but 50 years of OA, 50 plus years of OA, seems to suggest that if you overeat, it's very likely that sugar is one of your problems, right? It seems that the common experience of OA seems to suggest that most of us are addicted to sugar and forms of sugar. Once you're addicted to sugar, the brain doesn't know the difference between Nutrasweet and Trivia, and in my case, because I'm a really low bottom rock kind of addict, my brain doesn't know the difference between a banana and sugar because it's too sweet. So once the brain is triggered, the brain says, where's the rest? Why? Because I abused sugar, and sugar turned into alcohol in my body. And you can see that. So thank you for the question. It's very, very relevant, and it is written in the big book. Of course, when you're an alcoholic and you are drunk all the time, you stop drinking alcohol, what do you crave? Sugar. Of course you do. You crave sugar. And you go to an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting and ask around. People crave sugar as soon as they put the alcohol down. Now, if you're not a compulsive overeater yet, you can safely eat a little bit of sugar and nothing happens. But guess what? A lot of alcoholics that stop drinking, guess what? Then they need Overeaters Anonymous. It's a continuum, you see? It is not like there's one clear-cut addiction here and the other one there. No, the whole phenomenon happens in one body, in your body. So if you're not an alcoholic yet, count your blessings and don't drink alcohol. And don't drink sugar because it turns into alcohol. So that's my experience. Thank you for your question.
Thank you, Subi. Thanks, Marcella. And I did a quick search. You can find exactly what Marcella was talking about on pages 133 and 134. You'll see the word sweets and you'll see the word chocolate. Thanks so much, Marcella, for that answer. Anyone else with a question for Marcella this morning?
Yes, hi, Clara. I have a question.
I hear Clara. What's the first initial of your last name, Clara?
T, as in thank you.
Oh, good. And then one other person behind you, just one moment. Who was behind Clara?
Lisa.
Lisa, what's the first initial of your last name, please?
S.
S like Sam. Thanks. Clary, with your question first, and then we'll go on to Lisa.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Marcella. Thank you, everyone, for your service. I am new to OA. I started coming to the meetings on the 12th of October. I attended a phone meeting, and then I attended a face-to-face meeting starting the next day. And then I learned about a vision for you, and I chose to watch my food. So I've been abstinent now since Thursday the 16th. I love OA because people are so generous to want to support you. So I learned what it means to plan my foods. I've been reading the big book, and I've been listening to the recordings at the 7 o'clock. And I've really just been asking higher power to connect me with the right sponsor. There's lots of things that are coming up, and I don't want the food. I want the recovery. I want to know. I get something every time I listen to the recordings, or mostly the live meetings. But how do you know when you're ready? Because you spoke a moment ago about when you sponsor, you can pretty much gauge whether someone's really ready to embark on the journey of the 12 steps. But how do we know as a newcomer, as a person seeking that sponsor? Can you offer something that would allow me to sort of gauge? I really feel that I am, like I want this while I am in this space where the recovery is far more important than whatever the food can. And also, 20-something years ago, I wandered into OA and I did not hear the recovery. I just heard the stories. And my mom offered to pay for a diet plan, and it worked, but I panicked when I lost the weight. And so I knew at that time that I wasn't ready for whatever the weight loss had to offer. I was too frightened, so I didn't diet after that. I just knew somewhere in my psychic space that when the time was right, I would understand what was going on inside, and then the outside would just happen as a natural, you know, as a matter of just naturally. But how can I determine whether I'm really ready for these 12 steps? Because I feel that.
Thank you, Clara.
I absolutely feel that. Thank you.
Thank you, Clara.
Thank you so much for the question. It's a very, very good question. And so I want to remind myself and everybody that this work cannot be done alone. All the steps we begin with, we. And so the first thing is, this is impossible to do alone. That's the reason we gather here together. Okay, so let's for 1 second come to right here, right now. And welcome to all the newcomers. I'm thrilled, and I'm a little jealous of all the people that are beginning that found a vision for you so quickly. Let me tell you, with my experience of decades of OA, that you have found the best of the best of the best recovery in OA. There's nothing like a vision for you. You have found the best meeting in OA. And I welcome you with open arms. Yes, you will recover. Now, how do you know if you're 100% ready? Well, let's come for 1 second to right here, right now. It's Sunday and we're alive. Thank you, God, that we haven't died of this disease, because this disease is a killer. So we're alive. Not only we're alive, we're awake. We're not dreaming the overeating stupor that I used to dream when I overate and I distended my stomach to the top and I wake up with my tongue dry and my stomach swollen for all the food that I'm still trying to digest. So we're awake and we're alive. And now we're gathered together here with this magic thing. I mean, when you stop and you ponder, how in the world did we gather together on a Sunday morning? I think there were 140-something, right? And we're here together. And just ponder for 1 second. How did we get together right here, right now on a Sunday, and we're listening to one another to recover together from this horrible, horrible fatal disease. So we're together with this little device, and we listen to each other's voices, and we're here together to give one to one another hope and the message that you can and will recover. So I guess you're ready, and I am ready too. I'm going to read one paragraph in page 58. It says, remember that we deal with alcohol, in our case with food, but also alcohol. Cunning, baffling, powerful, without help, and I'm talking to you, the newcomer, the person that just began, whose first meeting is today. Without your help, newcomer, it is too much for us. But there is one who has all power, and that one is God, or your higher power. May you find him now. It says now. Now. It doesn't say later when you find the perfect sponsor or later when you, you know, do a beautiful, perfect step work. Now. If you're eating right now your alcoholic foods, this is the moment in which you can be 100% ready. Put the food down, stop eating, and recover. If you have 2 seconds of abstinence, you can keep building with 2 seconds into 3 seconds into 5 minutes. 5 minutes of abstinence is the way that it was granted to me, and it turned into 3 years and eight months. If you have 15 days of abstinence, you know that Dr. Bob was 17 days sober when he became a sponsor. 17 days sober. Where would I be without Bob? Cockiness, whatever you want to call it, to become a sponsor with 17 days of sobriety. Where would I be without him? Without whatever he had, that fire, that need, that urgency. Where's the next one so that I don't drink again today? So may you find him now. Where's the time? Now. Are you listening? Are you in the meeting? Were you ready? The time is now. May you find him now. And this is a formal prayer to my higher power. May we find him now. This is the time. You're ready. I hope that helps.
Thank you, Clara. Lisa S., your question, please.
Yes. Thank you very much. Also, I was wondering, what do you think about the AA 12 steps and 12 traditions as a, you know, helpful in recovery?
Okay, so this, I guess that this is the last question, right, Melanie, because it's almost 10?
If that works with your time, that would be good.
Yeah, 10. So,
okay.
Yeah, so the 12 and 12, just a little history of the 12 and 12. The 12 and 12 was published a lot later than the big book, and it's a wonderful collection of essays that comment on the big book. So it's a commentary on the big book. So you know how commentaries are very valuable, but they never replace the original text. You know how we have a religious text, you know, we have Torah and commentary of the Torah. And we have in other religions, we have, you know, the gospel and commentary of the gospel. We have the Beatles songs, you know, I learned all of my English, and I'm thrilled that you can understand me. All of my English is Mexican, and I learned it through Beatles songs. So we have the Beatles songs and the commentary about the Beatles songs. So what is the commentary of the Beatles song? Well, Lucy in the Sky of Diamonds, it turns out that it's an acronym for LSD. I learned that 3 million years ago before the fact, right? So it's a commentary. It's not Lucy in the Sky of Diamonds. Lucy in the Sky of Diamonds is this beautiful poetry that is descriptive and melodic and repetitive and catchy. So the commentary never replaces the original text. So the 12 and 12 is a wonderful commentary. It doesn't replace the original text. All you need to recover is the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And that's it for our
thank
time,
you.
Right? Yeah.
Yes. Yes, thank you. Thank you so much, Marcel, and thank you to everyone that asked the questions this morning. It just continued to you know, just broaden what we learned today, and even go beyond that. So thank you, and again, for your time and your study in bringing that to us today of those chapters, Marcel. It was lovely. And we will give information Hopefully, Marcella will give her contact information after we have closed the meeting, and I'll also give you the share ID. But I'd like to close the meeting this morning with page 164, A Vision for You. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we knew only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask Him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order, but obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with Him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to Him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as we trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.